Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Here in about an hour, we're going to have a Titans-styled presidential debate that you're going to want to tune into right around 8 o'clock between Joe Rex Road and myself. So make sure you're tuning in for that. Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us at 7:30. But first, Joe, you've kind of thrown out this interesting idea of a comparison between two programs that really in the 90s were powerhouse programs in college football, and ever since then, in different ways, have been searching to get back to that point. So with that being said, I will let you set this up as to where you want to go with this.
Well, I've thought of this before, but I thought about it again Saturday because Michigan, 24.5-point favorite, lost to Michigan State. And believe me, like, the talent gap between those teams is – there's no way that should have happened. It's another Jim Harbaugh fail, and he's a good coach who's way overrated, or at least was way overrated. I don't know if he is anymore. But it's another fail for Harbaugh. I mean, he's 1-6 at home now against Michigan State and Ohio State, his two rivals. It made me think of, again, the Michigan-Tennessee comparison that I've thought of, you know, often over the years, especially being here. And, you know, it's Tennessee can look at Michigan and try to not be the same. Now, they both are in these incredible droughts. I mean, Michigan's last Big Ten championship was 2004.
Yep.
Tennessee's last SEC East title was 2007. Last SEC title was the last national championship.
Yep.
So
that's depressing.
Yeah. So you're talking, you know, more than two decades. But you know, they were both, as of, you know, the early mid 2000s, they were what we think of them. And they both still have all these advantages that say they should be better than this, right? Now, I will say that Michigan has been better than Tennessee, at least in terms of being, I mean, they've had some top 10 teams. They've had some, well, top 10 at some point. Usually they end up falling off that. But they've had more success in the last decade than Tennessee has had. But then again, you look at like the Rich Rod era for Michigan and Southern. They've had some real – I mean, they had some terrible hires too. He was a terrible hire, kind of like a Dooley,
yeah,
for them. And Harbaugh is a better coach, better hire than Tennessee has made as far as we know. Maybe Jeremy Pruitt will be – that guy, but certainly Harbaugh is better than like Butch Jones, right? But the thing that the programs both have is they have, I think, this sort of overreaction to any little success, and sort of like it's like now we are owed this success. Now it's going to happen for us. I think it's a drought thing where it's like you wait, and you want it to happen, but there's an entitlement thing that I think really marks both of those programs. And Tennessee has to – I mean, both of them have to get past that and just try to be tougher than people and be better and play football. And there's been an upset – you know, recruiting rankings, and we should be doing this and that. And all – I think it goes with a drought, but it's just a mindset that both of them – I look at and I say this is a big part of it. I don't know how you get rid of it, but – I think they have a similar mindset of entitlement and overreacting to any little success and just assuming that they are owed something rather than going to earn something, if all of that makes sense.
No, I think it's an interesting comparison because when Michigan lost that game on Saturday, the first thing I tweeted was, oh, so Michigan is Tennessee once again this year. I think it's a really good comparison, and the rabid fan base that both universities have, I mean, they're just gigantic. I mean, I think people sometimes forget just how big the Tennessee fan base is. It's huge. Michigan goes without saying. It's a very big fan base. Both of these teams are trying and scratching and clawing to get back to relevancy in the national discussion. And there's a big obstacle in both of their paths. I mean, Ohio State is an obstacle that Michigan just has not been able – to get around as of late. I mean, heck, they hadn't had a whole lot of success getting around Michigan State or some other teams in the Big Ten. But Ohio State, that main obstacle. Tennessee, obviously, with their crossover opponent, They've got to play Alabama every single year. I think there are a lot of parallels with those two programs and fan bases, to your point, that are so starved to get back to this point where they're good again and they're in the national conversation and they're in the college football playoff for the first time. Remember, I mean, neither one of these programs have been really all that close to getting in the college football playoff since that's become a thing here in the last decade. So, yeah, it's just been one of those things that I think you look at those two programs, and I'm trying to think if I'm trying to compare Tennessee to another program out there, I think Michigan's probably the closest one I would do in terms of that, what we just talked about. I've heard Nebraska getting tossed out there too.
Yeah.
That's not a bad one. But there are a lot of parallels between Michigan and Tennessee.
I mean, Nebraska, see, the difference with Nebraska is Nebraska really, they shouldn't be great ever again.
Right.
And because of the recruiting situation there, it's the way things have gone with recruiting. It's so much about unofficials and it's so much about younger classes. You know, when it was the old days of you recruit guys in their senior year and you get them out here for visits and that's fine, then you could build these classes they used to build. But you can't recruit like you need to at Nebraska. But you can at Michigan. You can at Tennessee. I think Alabama and Ohio State are perfect parallels for both those programs. It's just this big thing in your way. Every year, you're going to lose to that team. So you know that. And you're probably going to lose in embarrassing fashion to that team. Michigan State, they've won 9 of 13 against Michigan. I guess that would be – I mean, Michigan State is a program that, you know, doesn't have all the advantages, but it's a good program. I don't know who would quite be that for Tennessee. I mean, obviously you think of like Georgia and Florida, but both of those programs are harder. I mean, the Tennessee has more programs in their league that are a problem for them than Michigan does. I mean,
right.
Penn State is the same kind of profile. But it's like recruiting rankings, too. And media is part of it, too, actually. You have a huge media core for both of them. And, frankly, there's a whole bunch of homers and cheerleaders in the media cores for both of them. But it's like every little thing, Michigan goes and wins at Minnesota. It's like, oh, Joe Milton, he's going to win the Heisman. And look at these guys. And I think it actually infects your team sometimes. So then you come out and get your butt kicked by a not great Michigan State team. You know, they just
lost to Rutgers.
Yeah, they just lost to Rutgers. Greg Schiano. It all ties together. But they punch you in the mouth, and you're all hung up on look at this new star recruiting rankings. You know what you want on your team? You got to go recruit. You got to go recruit 4 and 5 star athletes, and you got to try to compete. But it's good to have some people on your team who are mad about recruiting rankings and want to prove something wrong, too. I'm not saying, like, we need to go find some 2-stars, but, like, that's been a big thing for Michigan State and some of these other programs that, you know, even like a Kentucky maybe for Tennessee, you know. Now they've recruited well, but, like, there's a little bit of a chip on your shoulder thing with some of these places.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, Tennessee gets all this attention and – you know, who's the next? Harrison Bailey's the next guy and all this stuff. And, you know, I think sometimes it's like, just be tougher. Play. Now, I think Jeremy Pruitt, his style that he wants to play lends itself to that. He just got to be able to actually instill that toughness in his team and be able to physically play with teams. Yeah, but Harbaugh supposedly wants to do that stuff too. And another thing with those two programs is the changing of staff members.
Oh, man.
That has really hurt both of them. Harbaugh is firing and hiring and all over the place with what he wants to do on both sides. Well, Don Brown's been the consistent D coordinator for him, but all over the place, especially offensively. It's a new OC every year, and obviously we know Jeremy Pruitt. 12 staff changes. Like, you have to settle in on these are the guys, and let's have a few years of consistency and stability.
And I think – with the fan bases in particular, the chip on the shoulder that is there, that the minute things start going wrong, freak out ensues. They are so ready to get back to the 90s of when they were both powerhouses that the minute things start to deviate from that plan, like when Michigan lost that game on Saturday, just kind of scrolling through Michigan Twitter was, number one, hilarious. But number two, it reminded me a lot of Tennessee because they were just so ready. The built-up frustration they've got with Harbaugh and not being able to get them to the next level, it reminds me a lot of what Tennessee has dealt with the last 12, 14 years of just feeling like you're in this cycle, this never-ending cycle that you can't get out of. I think Michigan and Tennessee fans are both in the same spot there.
And the hard part, you know, like for Michigan is like they got their dream coach. I mean, Tennessee right. hasn't had, you know, I mean,
Peyton walk through the door.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, that's what it would be, right? Yeah. I mean, they haven't. I mean, what number of choice was Dooley was down the list? Mm-hmm. Butch was down the list somewhere.
We know what happened with Pruitt.
We know the Pruitt search. So they haven't had this, like, we got our guy, you know. And the fact that Michigan did and it's worked out like this has got to be depressing,
yeah.
right? But that's the thing, too. I mean, you just don't know. I mean, look at how many Clemson fans were excited about Dabo, you know? Like, well, why is this guy the choice? And then how many years did they go of Clemsoning and blowing these games, you know? So they're the example of you stick with something and it might work for you. And it still could for Harbaugh, it could for Pruitt. But, yeah, it's a very easy comparison. And I think the fan bases are very close in just this long – weight of something to change, and it is. It's like Groundhog Day a little bit.
When we come back, speaking of Jeremy Pruitt, what will the fallout for the Tennessee program look like if they lose on Saturday to Arkansas? We'll discuss that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune into this weekend's NFL Game of the Week on 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue and Gary Force Acura. This Sunday's NFL Game of the Week is the Pittsburgh Steelers taking on the Dallas Cowboys. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. with a 3:25 kickoff. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So, Joe, I think a really good comparison, an interesting comparison by you in the last segment, comparing Michigan's program to Tennessee's program. I think there are a lot of similarities there. Michigan just had a bad loss over the weekend to Michigan State, and now Tennessee in a spot where they're reeling, losing three games in a row. Georgia, a horrible loss to Kentucky, and then they just get shelled by Alabama a couple weeks ago. That sets up for a crucial matchup this weekend against Arkansas on the road, off the bye week, 2-3 on the season, a lot on the line as they enter into the second half of play. Jeremy Pruitt spoke to the media yesterday and just kind of talked about the challenges that Arkansas is going to place for this program, specifically on defense. Here's what Jeremy Pruitt had to say.
You know, been really impressed with, you know, how they've come together as a team. You look at them defensively, start with Barry Odom, I think, has done a fantastic job. They've created a lot of different looks in the secondary. I've created a lot of turnovers. I believe they lead the country in interceptions, been very opportunistic there. Tons of 8 drop. Rushing 3 guys and getting into coverage, mixing it up there.
So that was Jeremy Pruitt yesterday looking ahead to this Arkansas game. And, Joe, I got to ask you, this is, in my opinion, I said it last week, I think this is the biggest game that Jeremy Pruitt has coached so far at Tennessee. If you win this game, you've got a chance to kind of steer the ship in the right direction after going off course the last 3 games. If you lose this game, in my opinion, the fallout, not only with the fan base, but just around this program and negativity and in recruiting, I think it's going to be very, very bad for Pruitt and the Vols. How important is this game on Saturday from that standpoint, from your view?
Yeah, it's like the flip side of what we were just talking about. It's like this week with Harbaugh, you know. It's frankly, it's been exaggerated to Harbaugh's got to be fired. Like, well, you're not going to fire that guy given the success he's had. But the negativity is bad around him, and it would be bad around Jeremy Pruitt. It would, you know, it would rival like last year after the first 2 games, the difference being that you are actually to the point now where you should be past that stuff, and it's a little bit more like, okay. I mean, at that point at the beginning of year 2, realistically, no matter what fans were saying, and I don't know what percentage of fan base was saying it, but people were talking about his buyout last year after two games of his second year. That was, I mean, come on. You know, that was never really a real thing. But if you get to midway through this 3rd year and you're back in that kind of situation, then it starts to get a little bit like, eh. I mean, it becomes a little bit more reasonable to ask the question of where is this thing going when you get to midway year 3. I mean, I still think as a coach, you have to really, really suck to be, you know, on the chopping block after year 3.
Yeah.
Okay? But the negativity will be overwhelming, and it ties to the discussion we just had about the fan base, about the drought, about the overreactions both ways with things that I think are all – it's like everything is just overly sensitive because of all that stuff. And like you said, recruiting, everything, it'll be a bad situation. It's a huge game. It's, I mean, I can't argue with you. I thought – I mean, last year there were probably a bunch of games in that turnaround that are big, that are huge moments for him to try to get it turned around. I can't point to one. I mean, I guess whatever the next one after Florida. I don't remember which game it was. Mississippi State was a huge game. They found a way with a quarterback they couldn't even feel comfortable letting him pass, and they found a way to win it. That was big. But, again, that's year two. So now we're to year three. So I think you're right. I think that Arkansas is the biggest game yet for him.
Well, I think when you factor all that into it, I mean, the turnaround he had last year, the positive momentum at the start of this year, you lose this game, that positive momentum's gone. I mean, because Tennessee fans, if you lose this game to Sam Pittman in Arkansas in his first year, they're going to look at you and be like, all right, so you're telling me that this guy has come into Arkansas and gotten them to a place in year one where he is already better than you in year three, and you're supposedly going to be the guy that leads us back to prominence? Yeah. Good luck with that. That's what the tone of this fan base is going to be if they lose this game.
Yeah. This offensive line coach who, when he was hired, people were kind of like, boy, that's a little bit of a stretch. But, you know, good offensive line coach. Hey, good luck with that. Arkansas has just been completely awful. Just terrible, like not competitive recently. Firing guys after two games. You know, I know I'm exaggerating there a little bit too. But Chad Morris wasn't there long. They've been bad since the last years of the Bielema era. Terrible. And all of a sudden, this offensive line coach comes in and they're beating you. How? It'll be a fair question too.
Yeah.
You know, it's. I think Barry Odom is a huge hire for him, and Felipe Franks is a really nice pickup for them at quarterback. But still, you can't go lose to Arkansas, and it's that question or that line of questioning from fans would be totally reasonable on Pruitt. I mean, you got this extra time, you got to figure some stuff out. I mean, he's sitting there talking yesterday about D line coaching, like they've all been playing 6 inches too high or whatever. Okay, let's see that D line. Let's see that D line. You know, do something then. You know, you're the D-line coach. I mean, there's a lot on this game for him.
There is, and we had Trey Wallace on the Power T podcast last Tuesday, which you can catch every Tuesday here on ESPN 102.5, the game that comes out Apple and Spotify. And here's what Trey Wallace had to say about the Arkansas game and the importance that this game carries.
This game against Arkansas coming up in a week and a half of where we are now, I think it's big because Tennessee cannot drop that game and then be 2-4 and try to make up ground in the month of November. You know, because the month of November this year is not like the month of November in previous years. I mean, you're getting Florida, Auburn, A&M, and Vanderbilt. And I know Auburn's kind of down right now. They should probably have a different record than what they have. But I just think that if they drop that Arkansas game, you're going to lose – I don't want to say you're going to lose the locker room because I don't want to go that far yet. But you're going to have – if you thought the last 3 weeks were bad, go to Fayetteville and lose that game and see how much pressure Jeremy Pruitt's under then.
So that was Trey Wallace from Fox Sports Knoxville on the Power T podcast last week. What do you make of those comments there that Trey has in terms of maybe what sort of an effect this game could have in that locker room with Tennessee?
Yeah. Look, this stuff – gets in there, and it's way easier for this stuff, I think, to get into locker rooms because of how we all interact now. I mean, they see this stuff, and I mean, you had Jared Garantano last year talking about death threats and stuff like that when he was playing poorly. I mean, it's already there. There's, by the way, there's one way that Tennessee is way beyond Michigan. Now, Michigan Twitter can be funny a little bit, but Vol Twitter kicks Michigan Twitter's butt.
Yes.
So in the good way, but also in the bad ways, when things are bad, Vol Twitter can be something else, and that's part of it. And then you have players in the locker room. It comes down to it. Look, a lot of these guys, I mean, most of these guys want to play in the NFL, and this is big business, and they're trying to do what's best for them. But winning and losing has a huge impact on things like that. You talk about bad locker rooms, good locker rooms. Usually there's a correlation to good coaching, good talent, winning games, and the good locker rooms, you know? It's kind of a chicken and egg thing on that. You know, you can go both ways with it, but the bottom line is you get to 2-4, all the negativity will be around the program, then you're gonna see more stuff like that. You're going to see more unhappy people, and it's just going to be another thing for Jeremy Pruitt to deal with. It would be – he would have a heck of a job after that. And now we've also seen Auburn. I know, like, week to week you never know with them, but, boy, they look pretty good against LSU, right?
They did.
Texas A&M's playing way better. You know, it looks tougher from here too. So this in that, in terms of the bottom line, you know, you got to get this one.
You do, and you've got this game. I mean, Vanderbilt's the one game left on the schedule that you feel like Tennessee should just cruise in that game.
And they should run for about 400 in that game.
They should. So you feel good about that one, but really every other game besides that I think is totally up for grabs. I mean, I would give the edge to Texas A&M right now. If Auburn plays anywhere close to the way they played against LSU, I'm giving the edge to Auburn. Now, we know what's the likelihood of Auburn doing that. Probably not great because they're so Jekyll and Hyde all the time. But the point being, you've got at least three games left on your schedule outside of this Arkansas game that you absolutely could lose. So if you lose this game and it goes off the rails and you end up 3-7 on the year, that would be a disaster for this program.
Right. So you got to feel like you have to get you have to be able to count on four and go find that fifth. Well, that's only if you win this game.
Yeah.
You know, if you get this one, you feel good about Vanderbilt, and then can you get one? I think they could. I think they could win any of these games remaining, but they can lose probably all but one of them too. So, you know, you got to show with this time off too. And with this switch on D-line, and you just got to show more just competence out there. You know, you got to get rid of the dumb penalties and, you know, the needing to take timeouts on defense in the second half and lose all your timeouts, and just a lot of stuff that's been going on operationally that's just not up to par.
And also going to be interesting to see if some of the younger guys like Jalen Hyatt have a bigger role. Maybe Malachi Wideman finds his way in there at some point. A couple weeks now of practice to get these younger guys some reps, which Jeremy Pruitt has talked about. They haven't had a whole lot of opportunities to do that. Maybe you start to see some younger guys who I think probably talent-wise have a higher ceiling than some of these more established players that you've gotten in there, but just haven't known the playbook yet or haven't had enough reps for Jeremy Pruitt and his staff to feel comfortable at this point.
And you're not going to see a young guy quarterback, I don't think.
I don't think
so. That's pretty clear at this point, which I know people are upset about. But Jeremy Pruitt has got to – look, Jeremy Pruitt is only going to make a decision that helps him win right now, you know. And I don't blame that idea. I don't blame the idea of do what you can to win. I understand some people saying, well, how could that be Garantano? Well, that's the sad state of things, but – I'm not surprised by that. I'm not surprised that's how they think of it based on what we've seen of everyone else, so knowing that Harrison Bailey is a true freshman.
Yeah, I'm not either. When we come back, Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us. We'll dive into this matchup against Arkansas with him. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You know, for us in this open week, it was a great opportunity to go back to the basics, which we did. Just kind of going back through you know, the early days of install, trying to catch some guys up. And it was a good opportunity to do that and move some guys around to possibly create opportunities for guys that have worked hard in practice and, you know, really to see and to give them an opportunity.
That was Tennessee head coach Jeremy Pruitt yesterday evaluating where his team is right now over the bye week, maybe some opportunities for some younger guys coming up in the game against Arkansas. And to help us talk about that game against Arkansas, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our good friend Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. Josh, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, doing well. Good to be with you guys.
Good to have you with us. And Josh, we were talking in the last segment just about the importance of this game for Jeremy Pruitt and this Tennessee program. I went on record and said I think this is the most important game that Jeremy Pruitt has coached so far at Tennessee. As you view this week and this matchup against Arkansas, how crucial maybe a pivot point is this for Jeremy Pruitt and this Tennessee program for this season?
Yeah, it's a really important game. You have to have it. one, for the record, Tennessee's lost three straight. Tennessee's 2-3. A loss would put Tennessee at 2-4 with Texas A&M and Auburn coming up. And you can probably guess how it would go after that. I wouldn't be picking Tennessee to upset Texas A&M if Tennessee loses to Arkansas. But also, what would it say if Tennessee loses to Arkansas this week? An Arkansas team that has done well this year. The expectations were obviously low. Sam Pittman's done a really nice job with that team. But from a roster standpoint, there's a clear advantage for Tennessee. The Vols will have had 2 weeks to get ready for this game. And if Tennessee came back to Knoxville with a loss, that would just be a huge problem for the program and for Jeremy Pruitt for so many different reasons. I think Tennessee's going to win this week, by the way, but it's one that Tennessee really has to win. A loss would just, you know, it would hurt the program in so many ways.
How big? How much would it hurt the program? How big of a problem would it be, Josh?
Well, I think it would be massive, because I think the season would likely fall apart. If Tennessee's on a four-game losing streak and it's losing to Arkansas, another team that is inferior from a talent standpoint, that to me would say that the progression is not there, and we'll be revisiting the closing the gap comment from the Alabama game, because it's one thing to say that about Alabama and Georgia, and you have so far to go to catch those programs. You can say Tennessee's closing the gap and say, okay, well, maybe that's the case. You lose to Arkansas, that argument's out. It just would be. And fan unrest, the frustration within the building, they're just and then you'd have to worry about, okay, are players bought in? There's just so many negatives come out of it, because as good of a story as Arkansas is, and Sam Pittman is so respected, it's still one of the bottom teams in the league, and Tennessee is in year three with Jeremy Pruitt. So I could keep going with why it would be a huge problem. So you can't lose this game on Saturday.
Josh, what are a couple areas that you're really looking at for Tennessee of where they are now, and what some improvements that they can make in the second half of the season? If they're going to make a big jump, where do you think that's going to take place?
Well, the offense needs to be a lot better. I think that's pretty obvious. I actually look to the defensive side, though, because I have higher expectations for that side of the ball overall with Jeremy Pruitt as the defensive coach, along with Derek Ansley. And I know that he's been frustrated with a number of areas. He hired the defensive line coach, so you could start there. But also the secondary. He said after the Alabama game, it hasn't played well through five games. And I think there are a number of reasons for that, but it's still a group that I think is one of the more talented on the football team, with Bryce Thompson, Alante Taylor, Jalen McCullough, Key Lawrence. Does he get more of an opportunity this week? That's something to pay attention to, as a lot of the talk has been about more opportunities in practice for freshmen, but what does that mean on the field in the game on Saturday? So I would say the defense, which is, it's been okay at times, and it's not gotten a lot of help, it still could be better. And I think the one thing that Jeremy Pruitt wants to see from that side is more takeaways. Tennessee's given the ball up, and it's not taking it away enough. Quarterback play is an obvious point. I have lower expectations for that position at this point. So if it gets better, that's really good for Tennessee. That's just one of those, I need to see it to believe it, whether that's Jared Garantano playing the position or somebody else.
Well, on that defense, Josh, I see a little bit of a parallel between the Vols and the Titans, not to the extreme with the Vols, but I feel like that secondary has not been helped enough, you know, with disruption. Yeah. and you know, guys up front making plays. Do you think there are guys right now, because it feels like there's some young guys who at some point are going to be good players, but you're asking maybe a lot right now. Do you think that there's a guy or two who maybe could emerge and has the ability right now to give them some of that disruption and playmaking?
I think so. My thought at the beginning of the season was that it would be by committee that Tennessee would be able to be disruptive enough up front. Losing Darrell Taylor was a big loss, because he's so talented. He's a second-round pick in the NFL draft, and he put up the numbers. His presence, though, also had to help guys like Kevon Bennett and DeAndre Johnson, and not having him there meant that there's not one guy where the opposing offense is saying, hey, we have to make sure that we are protecting our quarterback from that guy. Still, though, those names I mentioned, Bennett, Johnson, Tyler Barron, somebody to continue to watch, a true freshman that they like and has played a good amount. Does Morvin Joseph play some more? He's practiced at outside and inside linebacker. Roman Harrison has shown, I think, athletic ability to be able to help rush the passer. And then that defensive line, Latrell Bumpus, Matthew Butler, those are guys that Jeremy Pruitt has talked about by name. It has to be the committee, though. It has to be everybody playing up to his potential, because I don't think there's an all-SEC guy up front, probably a pretty obvious statement. Talk about, you know, guys that are going after the quarterback. Tuoto can still be that. But those guys that are tasked with going and getting after the quarterback and creating havoc, they just haven't done enough. And I agree. I think that's probably hurt the secondary, and Tennessee needs more of that this week. Let's see. Can Tennessee, while I think they could have some matchup advantages, Arkansas is going to be physical and be ready to go. I think they'll be well coached up front. So let's see if Tennessee's defensive front with 2 weeks to get ready for the game, 3 weeks since the defensive line coaching change, if it makes a difference at all.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Josh, how have you evaluated Jim Chaney and the job he's done so far as Tennessee offensive coordinator, and how important is the second half of this season for him as he moves forward here in this program?
Well, it'd be difficult to say he's done a good job, and I know quarterback play is a big part of this conversation. The offensive line overall could be better. That's the group that came into this season with the highest level of expectation just because of the talent up front. And they also have not been healthy all the way through. I know that that's part of this conversation too. But Tennessee offensively is just, you know, it's one of the worst in the league. And with all the offseason talk of it's year two with Jim Chaney as the offensive coordinator, so a full offseason for Jared Garantano to get prepared and for the offensive players to have a better understanding of the system, and then the results are what they are, where they've actually helped the opposing defense score more here the last few weeks than they've helped Tennessee score points. The results just aren't close to being good enough. What it means for the future, I don't know. Jim Chaney's paid a lot of money to be the OC, and he came from Georgia back to Tennessee, and Tennessee invests a lot of money to get him out of his contract at Georgia. But Tennessee just fired a defensive line coach after giving him a two-year contract back in February at $1.3 million. So what does it mean for the future? I mean, everybody's, I guess, positions are kind of on the line in some way on the staff just because of where things are. If Tennessee can turn things around, then you hope to build on that. You hope to get better quarterback play in the future. And I know that Jim Chaney's not the official quarterback's coach. That's Chris Winkie. To me, it's still on Jim Chaney. You're making more than $1.5 million a year to be the OC. You need to get the quarterback position right.
No question. And we think, you know, Jared Garantano, he gives them the best chance to win right now. I know a lot of fans don't like to hear that, but, I mean, based on everything we've seen, I think that's actually clear to me. But how do you think he will respond here down the stretch in the last few games of his career?
Well, that's a good question. My guess is that he responds okay. I still point to last year and all the frustration that was there in the middle of the season, and a lot of fans never wanted to see Jared Garantano on the field again, but I pointed out at the time Tennessee's probably going to need him, and they did, and he helped them win. He was not the guy that led the way, but he, you know, at different times had really good performances, the second half against Kentucky, the game against Missouri. His schedule is not easy. A&M, Tennessee's probably going to need to score a lot of points. I have my doubts. Auburn, let's see, here in a couple of weeks. And Florida, of course, Tennessee's going to have to score a lot of points in that game. And that's going to be difficult, realistically, for Tennessee. But the comparison has to be Garantano to the other quarterbacks on the roster. And I would, I guess, probably lean with you, Joe, that I think he's probably their best option based on what I've seen from JT Stroud. And, you know, Brian Maurer, we haven't seen much. Last year, he had some flashes, but there were also times where he regressed on the field, and I think the coaching staff still has lacked a lot of confidence there. How much confidence do they have in true freshman Harrison Bailey? To this point, not a lot. Maybe that will have changed after a couple of weeks being off, but my guess is that they still see Garantano as the best option. Best and good are two different things, by the way. So he has to be better, too, and if Jared goes out there and turns the ball over, you can't stick with it, because I think that affects the rest of the way the team plays, and it can compound itself very quickly with Jared. We've seen that too. So I think Jared's their best option right now, and he may be the rest of the way, but he needs to be a better option. They all need to be better, and to me that still comes back to Jim Chaney and the coaching staff.
Josh, Joe threw out an interesting comparison about 30 minutes ago, comparing the Michigan program to the Tennessee program, and I think there are a lot of parallels there between the fan base and how much success they had, you know, 20 years ago and trying to get back to that point. As you look at those two programs, would that be a good comparison in your mind, Michigan and Tennessee?
Yeah, I think overall they both have a ton of great history and they have big-time expectations and still I think are branded as two big-time programs in college football. Michigan's had more success here recently overall. But yeah, I think you have a group of Tennessee, Michigan, Nebraska, Miami programs that were well-known across the country and have had big-time success nationally and are still trying to get back there and have been at different levels since then. But as time goes on, and with Tennessee and Michigan, you're pointing to the late 90s with championships. It feels longer ago, and it makes it feel like it might be more difficult to get back to where those programs expect. Michigan has Ohio State, which has been the biggest program in the way. Tennessee has Alabama, which has been the biggest program in the way. So I think you have a lot of comparisons there. I still look at Michigan and Tennessee, and I would still say those others I mentioned, Miami for sure, Nebraska somewhat, that, you know, if they're playing at a higher level, that's better for college football. I think most people agree with that. But again, it does feel like it's becoming harder and harder for them to get to where they want to go. With Michigan not being able to do it with Jim Harbaugh, that's probably what makes it even more frustrating, because he was the kind of coach going in there that was supposed to take them there. This has not had that guy yet. They've had a bunch of coaches that they hoped could take them there. Michigan hired somebody that they fully expected would get them there.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Josh, appreciate you taking time to join us, man.
Good. Thanks a lot, guys.
Absolutely. Josh. I mean, that makes me feel smarter. Josh agreed with us there.
I was going to say, so I'm right, Josh. Thank you. No, he hit all those points. And, yeah, I mean, that's the thing is the Harbaugh, they got their savior, and it still didn't matter. Don't want to overly depress Tennessee fans. You think about that, too. I mean, at least Tennessee won a BCS championship.
Right.
Like, Michigan never appeared in the playoff or BCS, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah. When we come back, how does the Trevor Lawrence news affect the Heisman Trophy race? We'll get into that on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9 is your exclusive home for the 2020 Masters Tournament. Tune in to 102.5 The Game for leaderboard updates next week on Thursday and Friday. Then on Saturday and Sunday, November 14th and 15th, ESPN 94.9 will broadcast the Masters live both days. It's all brought to you by Music City Golf Store in Belle Meade for all your golfing needs. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And fellas, it was announced over the weekend Trevor Lawrence will not be available to play for Clemson this upcoming week against Notre Dame. He was not eligible to play against Boston College either, dealing with COVID-19. And now that we know for sure, according to Dabo Swinney, that Trevor Lawrence will not be available for the Notre Dame game, number one, I think that makes the game against Notre Dame very, very interesting. Clemson struggled in the first half against Boston College on Saturday, figured it out in the second half and found a way to win that game. DJ Uiagalelei came in and played very well in the second half, led Clemson to a victory there. I think if Trevor Lawrence is in this game against Notre Dame, Clemson wins by maybe 2-3 touchdowns. I think this is going to be a pretty close game without him. It's going to be interesting to see how Clemson responds in this game, and if they do lose, how does that affect them in the overall college football playoff picture? Because I think you can make a pretty good argument, especially based on what we saw last week in the first half. They're a pretty different team with Trevor Lawrence in at quarterback, obviously.
Yeah, I didn't get to see really the BC Clemson game. Vrabel's son, almost part of a big upset there.
BC was up 28-13 in the first half.
Yeah, and you know, big time comeback. I thought that Uiagalelei, if I did that well, I think I did that all right.
Good job,
nice.
Thank you. Both of y'all nailed that.
Yes, nice. That's impressive.
It only took one day of just massively screwing it up for us to figure
Who's
it out.
The other backup though, Joe?
Yeah, honestly, first of all, yeah, I don't remember the name, but I know I would say it poorly.
Thank you, Peter Burns.
Yeah, that's right. But he seemed like, you know, he made some big-time plays. Man, he really moves well. Someone made the Dante Culpepper comparison. Maybe it was just someone on ESPN on the highlights of that game. And, man, he is big and really athletic and looks like he has a big-time arm, but –
Well, David Ubbin, our good friend from The Athletic, tweeted out, like, how many Power 5 schools right now would DJ Uiagalelei be starting for?
Yeah.
Spare few. I can tell you one in Knoxville he'd be starting for right now.
right. So that's a big game, and I don't know. I don't know what – I still would favor Clemson. I still think Clemson's going to go win that game. I don't think Notre Dame's all that good. But if they don't, yeah, it's just going to – it's going to make it interesting. I think – you imagine if the Big 12 hadn't basically eliminated itself right now. You know, I think then you'd really have I still feel like they're going to – if they stumble here, and especially if they come back around, Trevor Lawrence comes back the next week, they roll through everybody like we think, and they get a rematch and put it on Notre Dame.
They're in.
Then they're fine. Yeah.
I mean, Notre Dame may be in at that point too, depending on how the rest of their season goes. Because you look around the rest of the ACC schedule, this is going to be the biggest test for Notre Dame. They end up undefeated all the way through and then get crushed by Clemson in the conference championship game with one loss. I mean, they're going to have a chance anyway to get in at that point.
Yeah, they'll scream for it. And a lot of people who love Notre Dame will scream for it. I mean, I'm looking at their schedule. They go to BC. I mean, North Carolina has been eliminated, by the way, in case they were ever actually a contender.
Right.
John Glennon's Wahoos took them out this week. But they do have to go to BC, and they have to go to North Carolina. So, but, yeah, you're right. They'll have a case. It's just like if you beat a team without arguably the best player in college football on the field, and then he came back and throttled you, do you really deserve it? Like, I would pick – Porth's Bearcats over Notre Dame, but I'm not on the committee.
I'm just here to tell you, Cincinnati goes undefeated and Notre Dame finishes with one loss, Notre Dame's getting in. Yeah. I don't know if I necessarily agree with it, but that's what's going to happen.
I think you're probably right. I will say, when you do what they did to Memphis, I know it's Memphis, but you're talking about, you know, a pretty good program. When you do what they did, that's a really good team.
They are.
That is a really good team. And undefeated is still undefeated, right?
No, they are.
You beat every. I mean.
I can feel Porth's eyes glaring at me through the glass right now. He doesn't even want to make eye contact with me anymore.
Well, okay. Yeah, you're just talking reality here, you know.
Look, but I understand that everyone's going to be against Cincinnati being in the college football playoff. And you know what? That's okay. If they make it in, I'm going to be happy no matter what happens.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's
an us against the world mentality for the Bearcat fans over there.
Hey, it's a year of opportunity, you know. The problem is, what do they have to do to impress us from here? What can they do to impress us from here?
They have a game against UCF in a couple weeks.
Oh, yeah. Boy, get fired up.
Yeah. Not a great UCF team. But
they put up a lot of yards, just like Memphis, and Memphis got
stifled.
Smoked.
They did.
By the Bearcats defense.
And by the way, so Luke Fickle, that's a guy, Vrabel's best friend.
Yeah. Enjoy him.
Well, Michigan State tried to hire him, and he didn't go, and now people are talking about Michigan hiring him.
Yeah.
But there's going to be programs who are going to be coming after him. But, hey, maybe he'll – he might just be – it's like it might be Ohio State or nothing for him.
Well, Cincinnati lifer.
Well, maybe Luke Fickle can be the Titans' new defensive coordinator.
I don't think he'd take that
defensive minded coach.
Would he take that job?
Probably
maybe
not.
You can do it part-time from Cincy.
You could do that right now. Probably wouldn't be any worse.
Probably like improve the defense.
A Luke Fickle Skype session for 30 minutes every week.
Did Vrabel meet with him? Like, did he hang out with him at all this weekend? After the big win over Memphis? I don't know.
Could have.
Could have gotten a few tips.
A few pointers there. Well, with Trevor Lawrence missing these two games, how does that affect the Heisman race in your mind? Because I think coming into the season before COVID happened and all these different things where everybody, you know, the conferences were on different timelines and different schedules. Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, probably 1-2 in the Heisman race. Now, we know Ohio State's not going to play as many games as Clemson will. But now that Lawrence has missed two games or will miss two games, how does that affect the Heisman race in your mind, specifically between those two guys?
Yeah, it's so we have to do a thing every week now at The Athletic. We're doing a straw poll, you know, all the – I don't know if it's the voters or just college football people who write about it, but I had to give my last couple weeks. I switched up this week, and I went Justin Fields number one.
Really?
Which probably – and I haven't seen the results. Probably – I don't think there's probably a lot of people there. But, I mean, how many games does he have to play to – like for it to count? I mean, I watched him against Penn State, and I was like, I think he's the best player, which is no knock on Trevor Lawrence. And Trevor Lawrence may be the best NFL prospect, but I think Justin Fields is the best player in college football. So it's those two, and honestly, my third vote right now, I had Najee Harris up there, but I went with your guy, Mac Jones.
Finally,
I mean
some respect.
I mean, Mac Jones is like the numbers, you can't ignore him. I mean, and look, if I'm going to sit here and knock Mac Jones and say, yeah, but Devontae Smith and Najee Harris, I mean, what does Justin Fields have? A bunch of like two-star
bunch
kids
of scrubs
around?
Out there.
Yeah. I mean, what is Trevor Lawrence? He's handing off to Travis Etienne. So, yeah, Mac Jones, you can't ignore the numbers. They are pretty ridiculous.
They are pretty good. And, look, I don't think he's going to win. I think this is going to be a two-horse race. Now, I did see like a side-by-side tossed up on Twitter like 15, 20 minutes ago comparing the 2019 LSU offense, which I think most everybody considers probably the greatest offense in the history of college football, to this year's Alabama offense so far. And the numbers virtually are identical. I mean, I think LSU has slightly more yards per game passing. Alabama's run for a few more yards, and they both have averaged 48.5 points a game. Pretty incredible.
That is. But I want to know how 18 Alabama, wouldn't they be right there too?
They'd be close. I think LSU's offensive numbers were better. I think so far this has been the best Alabama offense in history, which is pretty incredible to think about when you see what they've had the last 5-6 years.
It is. When they played Tennessee a couple of years ago, you know, those game notes, a lot of times you don't get that much out of them. But the game notes for Alabama were absolutely amazing because of all the offensive records. The most amazing thing, and I don't remember the exact number, but they have the stat for how many yards per play they get when Jerry Jeudy runs a pass route, and it was like 5.6 yards. So every time – so basically on a series, if you send them out for two pass routes, you're getting a first down.
You're getting a first down.
I mean, like, that's one of the best stats I've ever seen. But, yeah, if that offense doesn't match up to this one, that's saying something.
Absolutely. When we come back, it's an important time for Titans Nation out there. Things haven't gone well the last couple of weeks. Joe and I have got the solutions. We're going to bait presidential style in honor of Election Day here in America. That's coming up next. You don't want to miss it. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.